Right now. Okay, so welcome everybody. My name is Kevin Sullivan. I'm what's known as an OMS technical lead here at Microsoft for the Americas. And so with that focus, I'm obviously focused on this thing called OMS, or more specifically Operations Management Suite. So today, as always, we will have a short introduction for those of you that may be uninitiated or just getting started with OMS, just to give us a grounding on where we at, we are, where we are at with OMS and what's within the OMS platform and solution. And then I'm going to drill down on a fairly specific topic in within OMS, and showing off some of the technology to overcome a fairly common problem when it comes to a specific use case of OMS, which in today's case will be disaster recovery. So we'll have more of that here in a few moments. All right, so before we get started, just usual disclaimer. This call is open to everybody, so as always, I see familiar names on the board from folks here at Microsoft, along with me, as well as some partners I work with, as well as even some customers. This call is intentionally open to everyone, and because of that, the material that I will share with you is public information, or rather, sometimes it's kind of NDA, but I always get approval from the specific product groups before I divulge. But in general, don't expect any NDA conversations or secret squirrel type of information and that type of thing, given that there's no way I could possibly make sure that the lawyers are all happy on both ends if I would so do that. A couple logistical things: use the IM window for questions. I will do my best. There's just me on the other end. I'll be doing the majority and probably all of the talking in this particular session today, so I can't talk and type at the same time. However, I know that there's folks, again, Microsoft partners and customers that have been here before in season, so feel free to ask a question, and if you feel free to even give a response to questions if you think you know the answer, and I will do my best to keep up with that during as well as it towards the end of this to try to make sure that there's no one left hanging, if you will. And then finally, these sessions are recorded. So there's two links there. Let's see, did I update those correctly? Yes. So that AKA MS, the OMS Fridays, I believe will drop you to my read-only SkyDrive. It's open to the world. So you'll find both the PowerPoint files as well as just the raw video files that I create as part of the Skype session. And then that other one will basically take you to a much nicer experience from a recording perspective. So streaming off of Channel 9, our Channel 9 website, essentially, so you can download in different formats or just on demand watch to your heart's content, all of that good stuff. Okay. So today's agenda, very simple. As always, we'll do a grounding on what is Operations Management Suite. I'll move through that rather quickly. It's for me, it's Groundhog's Day, but I think it's still essential. There's always at least a few people on the line here that may just be getting started, and so I feel it's a good use of 7 or 8, 9, sometimes 10 minutes to go over that. We'll focus most of the time today on this particular area, and I put this up on the blog. I didn't know exactly how else to phrase it. But handling those pesky IP changes when doing DR. So what I will show is in a basic demonstration example is something that's very common when it comes to doing really any kind of failover strategy when we're talking about going from one data center to the other, and in this case to Azure, which is really just another data center. So the challenges with that are a whole new network, and obviously I've got servers and clients that are trying to hit things that may have had to fail over because of a true disaster, or maybe I'm just moving stuff preeminently for migration, et cetera. What happens to IP addresses? They change, and that causes issues because, well, if they change, then DNS is out of whack, and the names I was using before from the applications and user perspectives may change. So we'll talk about and show an example how using specific aspects of OMS, particularly the recovery services, Azure Site Recovery, as well as some Azure Automation, can help us automate and address those very elegantly versus not so elegantly or manually in a lot of situations that we find ourselves from a DR perspective. And then, as always, we'll have Q&A at the end of this, and then also during. I'll do my best, and and to keep up with the flow, and we'll go from there. Okay, so as I said in the last session 2 weeks ago, this is our last session of, as we know it, of OMS Tech Fridays. I'm not saying goodbye forever, just saying that this is kind of, if you're familiar with working with Microsoft, you know that our fiscal year begin and end is June to July. And so I'm taking this time as a break to end this session and then maybe retool and maybe rethink maybe a similar offering or maybe something completely different as we move towards our new beginning, at least from a Microsoft perspective, from a fiscal year perspective. If you have the meeting request on your calendar, I believe I did have it through the next Friday, which is, 2 weeks from this Friday. So I guess the 24th, if I'm doing my math correctly. There will not be a call there. So if you show up, you might be alone, or at least I won't be there. So just FYI. And again, call out to recordings are there. The recording of what I'm doing right now will be on the Channel 9 site, as well as dumped in my OneDrive folder at those AKA links, again, as I had already mentioned. Okay. All right, so let's get started. So let's go through the overview of Operations Management Suite, and then I'll drill down into the focus area for today, and then walk you through my pesky IP change and what to do about them from a DR scenario. So OMS, so what is it? So OMS, by its name, is the Operations Management Suite. So the Operations Management Suite, as its name implies, it's a suite of solutions. And more particularly, it's a suite of solutions around helping with key areas of systems management, right? So how do I monitor? How do I analyze? How do I know things are running appropriately or not? But also stretching into other remedial types of IT management areas that we've had forever. Backup, archiving, business continuity, disaster recovery, and tools and solutions to help me with all of that. So Operations Management Suite is, a lot of people, and we'll talk about this and drill in, they'll say, well, I have OMS, or I'm using OMS to do this. And they're kind of half correct. What they're probably meaning is that they're using one or more aspects of OMS. And so what you'll see is there is a suite of solutions that can stand on their own, but also can be bundled in and brought forward from an acquisition perspective as the suite of solutions that you can consume within your particular environment. So it's ever evolving. So a lot of folks, are, you know, in me, at least speaking for myself, has always been and still kind of amazed at the rate of and pace of change and evolution of what we offer features today versus what might be 60 days from now. And I've talked about this in previous calls around whether we're talking about the log analytics piece or the recovery services pieces or the automation pieces. It is very much ever evolving. And the reason we're able to do that is because of the way this thing is built. And that is that last bullet point, which is, look, this is truly a born in the cloud solution, but it's not, and it's a little unique in that it's not really built just for cloud things. It absolutely will bring value to you for things you're doing in a public cloud. And by the way, that public cloud could be Azure, it could be Google, it could be Amazon, it could be a kind of a quasi public cloud, like maybe from a Rackspace or others that are, you know, maybe you're just doing hosting type things. Operations Management Suite does have value and can have capabilities across all of that. So it's really built for especially the areas in which we find ourselves in, which is what I like to call the hybrid environments that we have. Traditional on-premises, absolutely. Everybody's got that. But what most people are starting to get is at least hybrid and if not more and more cloud things. And so Operations Management Suite and the solutions therein can spread across all of this. So this graphic kind of illustrates that. There's a call out here and there's intertwined and because we're Microsoft and you know this suite is essentially supposed to be for folks to do management things, right? Monitoring, alerting, backup, recovery. So a lot of people will take pause and say, well, look, we've already done this. And you're absolutely correct. And we continue to do it with this thing called System Center. So back in the early 2000s, we developed, and again, it's a suite of solutions that is System Center to do things like monitoring and backup and change management and all of these types of things, orchestration, automation. So OMS, the natural next question is, hey, is this a replacement? Is this the beginning of the end of System Center? And as far as it stands now, it absolutely is not. OMS is very complementary and a very nice, elegant extension in a lot of ways to existing System Center platforms, or in fact, System Center platforms yet to come, such as what we'll release later this year with the System Center 2016 wave that is looked to do out later this calendar year. Yes, there's absolutely overlap. That is, people might find themselves using, for example, this thing called Log Analytics, which is within the OMS suite, and using that for the bulk, if not all, of their monitoring of their update position across their data center, versus maybe using Operations Manager or Configuration Manager to do that. But as it stands today, this is more of a win-win for both, or I can continue to use one or another. We don't really see it as a replacement. And the other point I want to make from this slide is, again, it's in the cloud. There's absolutely some abstractions that allow us to do things like this rapid evolution, right? How we can pace changes within, measure those in weeks and months versus quarters and years like we've had traditionally. But it very much addresses both on-premise traditional as well as public cloud, regardless of where that public cloud or where your use of public cloud might be. So let's take a look at what I look at as the four areas, right? So I've got this thing called OMS, that's great. My sales guy talks about this all the time, and maybe my manager's, yeah, this is operations manager suite. It's this nice, lovely thing. We as technical people have to at some point figure out, okay, well, what is it exactly? What are we getting ourselves into? What are the actual products and solutions under this? So I like to look at them in these four areas: log analytics, automation, availability, and security. So log analytics, if we look at log analytics, hey, guess what? We have within OMS, there's this thing called Log Analytics, pretty inventive name for the area it covers. So Log Analytics is essentially to grab any and all data sets, whether it's security auditing data, performance metrics, things that are happening on the network, things that are happening in certain products such as Active Directory, or even things like Office 365 now, and bringing that in and giving us some insights to that. That is called Log Analytics. This is a workspace dashboard way of getting a nice view of the state and well-being of your system across different perspectives, whether it's from a patching perspective, a security perspective, a health and well-being of services such as Office 365 or other products such as SQL, etc. So we just aptly call that Log Analytics. Formerly it was known as Operational Insights. But so for those of you that are saying, well, what happened to Operational Insights? Well, it just became Log Analytics, is what we just call it now. And I've had three calls, and you can go back to the recordings, and we've had various walkthroughs on specifically Log Analytics in the past. Azure Automation. So this is our automation story, or rather it's the part of the automation story that we have within the OMS suite. So again, from a System Center perspective, for the last several years, we've had this part of System Center called System Center Orchestrator. It's absolutely still there. It's absolutely still there in the upcoming 2016 release. Azure Automation, and we're going to see some pieces of this in my walkthrough today, is all about the automation or the control and runbook workflows that we can now have and store and use within Azure to do automation across my assets in Azure, as well as on traditional on-premises environments or even any another cloud. And hopefully that'll become apparent, especially today as we walk through the demonstration I have prepared for here in a few minutes. Azure Site Recovery and Azure Backup are now recovery services, and this covers our availability, or what a lot of people call business continuity perspective. So unlike System Center, we never really in System Center had a DR solution. We absolutely had a backup solution such as Data Protection Manager, but again, Azure Backup very much augments that. So I can do disk to disk from DPM, and I can now archive that for essentially forever, 99 years, up to the cloud using Azure Backup, or now this recovery services service that we now offer. Azure Site Recovery is also now part of that recovery services service, but it's disaster recovery. And I've talked, and we'll see a little bit more in this specific walkthrough, but I've also had subsequent ones that talk about this. But essentially, this is for remediation or getting around and staying operational in the event of real disaster. Or maybe I just want to migrate things. I want to do it in an elegant, controlled way and have the ability to fail back. Well, these are all elements of recovery services, and we can use that as such with this part of OMS. And then finally is security. And security alone, there are various things within security that we offer from Microsoft, some point solutions around things around O365 and Azure. But log analytics seems to be kind of the core aggregator and continues to be as far as getting a perspective, holistic footprint of what's going on from a security posture. And so security is not really a product. You will see mainly a lot of evolving what we call solution gallery items or solutions within log analytics. And there's more than a few within log analytics today, security and audit solution, as well as even you can consider update solution as part of that realm, as well as wire data solution, et cetera. But essentially, that is also a big aspect of OMS and what a lot of people see a lot of value in using operations management a suite for, and specifically the log analytics pieces as well. Okay, so a couple more slides, and I'm going to dive right in here. I've probably expounded too long, but essentially, why OMS? It's great, it's valuable. I put an asterisk by no infrastructure maintain. Well, of course, depending on the solution, yeah, there's going to be some infrastructure a little bit. But I like to point out that it's a vastly different story from an architecture perspective when we think of traditional management platforms, including our own, right? System Center, HP's set, IBM's set of technologies, all these traditional packages had a lot of baggage with them, a lot of complexity to them because, well, they had to. They were running on premises. There's nowhere else for them to be. Now you'll find with OMS solutions and stuff, log analytics, recovery services, et cetera, that we have taken a lot of that stuff and we've taken it upon ourselves to offer that and abstract that from you. And so from that way, it does become simpler. It does become more rapid and hopefully easier to integrate as we look to consume them. Roadmap is very continuous, and I've seen this slide before, but this is a short list of a laundry list of things that are to come, as well as what has happened in the past, 6, 8, 9 months or so. But essentially, it's just goes back to that that ever evolving part of our story there. Okay, so handling those pesky IP changes when doing DR. All right, so let's dig into this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to present one of my desktops here. Hopefully, I'll pick the right one. Make sure there's nothing embarrassing on there. Maybe not. Let's see. I'll wait for that to come up. Usually, it takes a second or two. And so hopefully you guys are looking at a screen that I've just shared out. Okay, so, and by the way, can somebody verify, just make sure I'm talking, you guys can see like a remote desktop session I just opened up. Awesome. All I need is one. Awesome. Thanks, guys. All right, so here's the problem. Right, we have this thing called recovery services, or more specifically, Azure Site Recovery. And so, if you have attended any of my other calls, I've had a few calls on ASR and recovery services. But essentially, this is the ability to take, hey, I've got a running set of virtual machines on premises, and I want to move these, or rather, I want to fail them over, losing the least amount of data that I can, and get them up and operational in the least amount of time that I can. So that's disaster recovery. So that's pretty high level. So what ends up happening is if I have, for example, in this basic demonstration example, if I've got, let's say, these four servers. So I've got a CentOS box, I've got a Windows file server, I've got a Windows web server, and maybe a SQL backend that's supporting this application on web. So for example, if I have these guys running, and just to prove that they are running, so if I go to my web server, and I'll just, while that's spinning up, I'm going to go to my CentOS box. You can see this guy is running. It's not running much. It's just a default install of Apache. I can look at, I think I put a PHP info page in there as well. You can see that, you know, it's a responsive web server. It's just a standalone CentOS box running here. And then I've got blogengine.net running with a simple blog server running as well. And I also have a file server. Whoops. So if I just go out to a share, I've got a share and I've got some stuff on it, right? So pretty simple stuff. Now, here's the issue. So let's say a disaster hits the building, right? These services go down. So for example, if I go in and I'm going to simulate that by just running a script, and all this script is going to do is it's going to go one by one and it's going to shut these down. You can see if you look really closely, the replicating changes. So these happen to be Hyper-V. Now, again, what I'm showing you is exactly similar to take care of this problem, even if it were VMware or even physical servers, Windows or Linux. But the important thing here is that I'm just basically taking these systems down. So if these systems are coming down and I try to refresh, obviously I'm not going to get very far. These guys will just fail because, well, I just shut them down. So what I want to do is, for example, I want to take these systems. Let me go back to my portal, and I want to fail them over. So as you saw in my RDP here, notice that they're down now. If I try to ping out to, I'll just take one of the servers like that IIS server. You know, there's a local IP address here on my local on-premises lab of 10.10.18.something, right? Because that's the IP address range of these servers. So IIS 1, SQL 1, CentOS file 1, etc. Now, what I want to do is, now that I'm down, I want to fail those over to the other side. So what I can do is I can use recovery services. Now, what you're looking at is a recovery services vault. This vault essentially is where I'm protecting those particular four servers. So I've already done through this, and I have done a walkthrough, which basically shows you how to do this. But yes, there's some work to be done. I've got to create a process server on premises, and I've got to create the vault and protect them. As you can see, I've done all of this. So I've got IIS1, CentOne, File1, SQL1 already in protection. But at the moment, they're down right now. So what I want to do is I want to actually fail these over. One of the things that recovery services allows you to do is I can fail systems over in a formal fashion. That is, I can bring order to the process. So as you can see in this example, I'm going to go ahead and just kick this thing off. I'm going to fail over my SQL server first. I'm going to fail over these three servers, and then I'm going to do something different. I'm going to run a script, an automation post step, to stitch things up, and I'll explain why here in a second. Before I do, I'm going to go ahead and kick the failover button. Now, notice for you, those of you that are used to ASR, you're probably wondering, well, why are you doing a test failover? And I'm doing this out of convenience because it's just faster to do a test failover. Notice that when you do test failover and I pick a known VNet that I'm already cross-connected to, that is, it knows that I've got a fully routed segment. So I've got a virtual network set up in Azure, in my subscription, which is fully routable to the on-premises network. So you know, take my word for it. It's the on-premises network is just a small 10.10.18 /24 network, and I have a 10.20.1 /24 network. It's going to, and that's represented by Pod2 VNet 1. Notice it's warning me. It's saying, hey, if you can, I'll let you do this, but if you do this, know that you better make sure your other systems aren't up and running still, because then you'll have clones of things, and that's a bad thing. But it's going to go along its way. So what I'm essentially doing is I've forcibly taken those down, and hopefully within a few several minutes here, this particular script or this particular recovery plan will resurrect those four servers in the order that I specified, and then it's going to run some automation. Well, why do I need to run automation? Well, let's go back to the lab for a second. Let me show you this. So what you're looking at right now, if you're familiar with Microsoft and DNS, and really if you're a Windows guy or gal, who isn't, right? This is pretty familiar to you. It's been around with us for many, many years. It's just, here's the DNS console, it's the MMC pointing to the zone that represents the FQDNs for my lab, bcdrpod2.lab. Now in that lab, notice that I've got other things going on, but remember those four servers. I got H1, SentOne, File1, IIS, SQL1. When I tried to ping out to those, they timed out. And why did they time out? Well, because, and let me refresh this. This 10.10.18, they don't exist anymore because I shut them down. So here's what's going to happen, right? The three servers that I have that are Windows, File1, IIS, SQL, they're all domain join, full-fledged members of the domain. Great. That's awesome for them because I've turned on dynamic DNS updates. So really from this perspective, from a failover perspective, assuming that I have a surviving DNS server somewhere, and that somewhere could be on-premises in another on-premises environment in that network environment that didn't go down, or it could be as an Azure VM, which is good practice, right? So I have a DNS established and just sitting there replicating with the other DNS server. These guys will update themselves just fine. But notice, most often the Linux boxes will not. I'm not going to allow, and nor do I have dynamic DNS in a lot of cases, especially for our Linux friends, right? Or Linux or Unix that I've got going on that also exist on fully qualified domain names. Notice that 10.10.1851 is a static DNS address. So what will happen is it'll fail over. SIT1 will come up on that other network, but nobody's going to care. Why? Because if I try to ping out to them, such as this, it's always going to point back to here, unless during that DR process or after that DR process, I actually take the manual steps to update the static records, or I do something automatically via script. And that's what I'm doing here. So while this runs, let's make sure it's still running. Notice this test failover is still going, right? So we'll get back to here. Hopefully this, it's Hyper-V, so it should take about 5-6 minutes for this thing to go through. So while we wait for that, let's take a look at what this step is doing. So remember, this post step, it's going to run this script, something called fix-DNS. Well, what is that? Well, let's go to automation accounts. And again, like recovery services, this is all part of OMS, right? So what I'm showing you is Azure Automation. And what you're looking at right now are the various automation accounts that I or others in this subscription have created. So the one that is basically running that fix-DNS script exist within this particular automation account. Now the automation account itself is just it's a holding container, it's a vault. It allows us to securely create and manage what we call runbooks. And these runbooks essentially are either workflow scripts or just straight PowerShell scripts to tell that I can trigger in different ways. So as you saw from my recovery plan, one of the ways we can trigger is it's built into the recovery service to say, hey, at this step, I want to go and do something during the disaster recovery, right? Just kick this script off, come back when you're done, and then go to the next step, right? So this is where we keep this. So let's start with that fixed DNS. And while I don't have something called fixed DNS, that was a pretty name I had in the recovery plan. What that fixed DNS is going to call is it's going to call this script right here, run fix-DNS-on-prem. And what that script's going to do, I'll just go ahead and take a look at it real quick. It's not going to do a whole lot. It's going to authenticate itself. Which is nice about Azure Automation. We can securely hold credentials. So for example, because the Azure Automation PowerShell by default is going to run within the context of my Azure subscription, it needs to have an account with authority to basically use as that security context. So I'm pulling in a credential I have securely stored in my Azure Automation account, and I'll show that here in a second. It's going to log in using those creds here at 5. It's going to select one of the subscriptions that particular account has access to, called BCDR Black Belt Lab. And then it's going to run this commandlet. And this commandlet actually is just this runbook is here to call another runbook. And the reason I'm doing that is because this particular script is set up to stitch up my DNS. And that DNS is a server, in my case, on-premises. Now, the DNS could be in Azure. The DNS could be an Amazon. It doesn't really matter. It basically needs to kick off a runbook in the context of something that it can touch. In this case, my DNS server. Okay. So notice that this one's going to call this other script. So the recovery plan calls this script, which all it does is it calls another script. That other script is where all the magic happens. And it's this one right here, fix DNS. So if I look at fixed DNS and I go to view it, and you can see that very similar. I'm going to come in. I'm going to authenticate as somebody. I'm going to select my account. But now it's got to do really two things that I'm doing in this script. The first thing I'm doing is, well, remember in the recovery plan that I've successfully failed over all of those four servers. So they're up and running, right? So I take advantage of that by saying, okay, well, go up and running. And by the way, that SynthOne box, grab the VM properties off of that guy. Once you get the VM properties, then insert into the NIC, I want the information about the network interface IDs. So for example, I think I still have this running somewhere. Just to show you this, what this script is doing, I'm pulling this down. I'll kind of show what's actually or what just did happen, because it looks like it's already made. So for example, I'll take one of my test systems that's running in my lab. Notice I've already authenticated and all that good stuff. But now I'm going to come in, I'm going to get its properties. So once I get its properties with this command, and if I look at, well, what does that give me? Well, it gives me all of the properties of that object, that particular VM. Once I do that, I can then drill in and give me the network interface. So notice part of this is this network profile, and it contains all the information about all the network interfaces on there. So I'm going to grab even deeper information by running that script. And then I'm going to, once I have that, and what that looks like is this. So if I look at NIC ID, you get this screen. Well, that's better. But what I actually need is I just need this part of it, because that's the unique name of that ID. Now, here's the thing. I don't know what that is up front. I know what the names of my machines are because I'm failing them over, but I don't know this piece of information necessarily. So what I need to do is I need to parse that with this concatenation command. And then once I have that, whoops, there it is. It gives me the name of that NIC. See, right here, right? And then once I have the name, now I can grab the interface. Whoops. And then once I have the interface, from that interface, notice that when I ran that, see this, all this information, lots of information about here, but notice what I'm looking for is this. What I want to find out is Azure is going to give me an IP address. I have no idea what that IP address is going to be in any given day. I just know I'm allowing it to dynamically grab it. So now what I'll do is I'll take that IP address and I'll parse that out of there. And how I do that is I simply run this command, which essentially gives me what I need, 10.20.1.8 in this case. Now, I won't go through this, but then what has to happen next in that script is that I've got to then manipulate DNS. This is all PowerShell. And the beauty is the common thread across all of this, it's all PowerShell. Everything I'm manipulating in the Azure Fabric, everything I'm manipulating in the Azure RMVM, everything I'm going to do on premises or wherever that DNS server survived or where it's at, so I can statically change these records. And I don't want you to get too hung up. Yeah, I had to look these up because I don't do PowerShell against Microsoft's DNS every day. But the good news is we have commandlet references that have been there and are tested, et cetera. I just looked these up and I'll show you the links and how to do that. But in this particular case, because I'm using Microsoft DNS, it could be at some other DNS, as long as I can PowerShell it, or even if I can SSH to it, as long as I can control it through PowerShell scripting, it becomes very, very easy to automate using Azure Automation. And with DR, using Azure Automation via my recovery services recovery plan. Okay, so once I have that IP address, as you can see, this thing's just going to basically inject, and there's some hard-coded values here, but you get the picture, right? I can use $IP address because I don't necessarily know what it's going to be from a failover perspective. Okay, so the result of this, let's take a look at what's happened. So you see that I've got a new alert here. And in this alert, I've got, it looks like we're at the point of the test where it's saying, hey, I failed everything over. Everything looks green. That's a good sign. User inputs required. So what's happened, hopefully, if I go to my virtual machines and my subscription, among other things, you'll see those. Yep, there they are. I've got H1 sent one, and it appends a test just to, you know, make sure we know this is a test failover. But essentially this machine, so for example, this sent one box is running. It's running Linux. These guys are running Windows, etc. If I go back to my lab, and what I might do, because it might be too soon for the refresh, I'm going to give this a flush DNS. Now, remember, if you look above, I tried to ping out to a few of these and they failed, right? So things like IIS1 are now successful, but note the IP address, right? Well, I cheated on IIS1 because it's dynamic. I didn't have to do a thing because in my little lab here, they're dynamic DNS. But that sent, what about that sent one box? What happened to him? Well, he's good to go too. Why? Because of that script. And if I go back here and look, I haven't refreshed this. Notice that, you know, 10.10.18, 10.10.18. If I refresh this zone, hopefully I will show, well, gee, these guys now exist and they happen to be on a different network. These guys were updated dynamically. I didn't necessarily have to do anything other than just have them show up and then have a cross-connected network back to where that DNS server survived. But this one, I was able to patch up without touching it. That is, I automated a repeatable script that I called through the recovery plan. And so finally, now that I've done all of that, if I maybe start with a fresh browser session and I go back and I try to get into my stuff. So let's start with the IIS server. That usually, and by the way, that blog engine thing takes, every time it goes to sleep and you wake it up, it sits there and takes a few moments to get in memory. So we'll give that a second. Here's my sent box. He comes up pretty immediately because it's Linux. It's lean and mean, and all it's doing is running a static Apache test page, as you can see. And of course, my PHP info dot page that I threw on here, which I can't spell. Fix that real quickly. And I still can't spell. Get rid of that period there. There we go. And the reason I point this out, because on this page, buried on here, just to show you, there's no smoke and mirrors here. Notice that it knows that it's 10.20.199. That's signifying that absolutely that thing is now running on Azure. And it took me about 5, maybe 7 minutes to get it up and running and for that automation script to run. And again, I can, you know, just to prove the point, I can go to my file server. And there we are, you know, reaching it just like we always did. So my user should be happy. Any applications that might have been using these services, the web server, the SQL database that came over. And by the way, that SQL database is for real. So that blog engine site, for example, it did come up. Now it's running in Azure. The database that holds all the blog entries and all of my customizations and dashboards for it, I've set it up on that SQL server. So it's also important for that guy because the web server is going to use the FQDN to talk to it. So in a failover situation, all those IP addresses change. So I have to take care of that either dynamically through dynamic DNS or if it's all static for what I just showed you here. So that can apply. In this example, I used Hyper-V. This was the exact same. So this whole method of, you know, going into my recovery vault, once I got machines under protection, and once I do that, this recovery plan and the way it's customized, regardless of exactly what it is, well, it won't let me customize because it's in process right now, is exactly the same, right? The logic is exactly the same. Those scripts are reusable. I don't have to reinvent, oh, this is Hyper-V versus VMware versus physical. No, it's like, well, no, this is to stitch up DNS, or perhaps load balancers need to be updated. Any number of things that in today's world of DR are very manual and why we do these crazy drills and waste everybody's time. Well, we still want to test and we still want to be confident in the process. But with Azure Automation plus recovery services, I feel we can do this in a whole lot better way and a lot more efficiently than we have in the past. Okay. So I'll stop that sharing there. And let me move back to my content. All right. So that was from a demo walkthrough perspective. Hopefully that was useful to see some of that and valuable. I know that when it comes to showing off, like how did you do the script and automation, you know, I'm probably going to intrigue maybe two people out of 80, you know, because it's very hard to demonstrate. So a couple of links to get you started. And again, if you reach out to me, I'm happy to share the script samples I have and all that stuff, how I've done this. But like every good scripter and everybody that does this type of automation, rule number one is I'm going to plagiarize first. So a lot of this stuff, you find something that's at least 90% of the way you want to do it, and then you just use that, and then you fill in the blanks with 10%. So to fill in the blanks with 10%, the top two links, obviously ASR documentation to start, Azure automation, a documentation start, and specifically, you know, that last link, that DNS PowerShell commandlet reference. Actually, I just thought of something. The third link about the primer, I didn't explain this. I kind of talked through it. So remember in my example, the recovery plan is actually running a script, which then runs a script. And I apologize, I didn't explain that too well. The big reason I'm doing that is because the second script is going to be launched in a hybrid worker. So for example, if I go back to my desktop here and I look at the setup of this, go back to my Azure Automation account, one of the things that I can specify is I can have one or more services running somewhere else, right? Traditionally on premises, or could be in another cloud, or it could even be in Azure too. There's various reasons to do this. Well, why am I doing it in this case? Well, the reason is because that script that I'm running to ultimately stitch up my DNS has to natively call into DNS. It has to have access to the PowerShell modules to do that and have the security context to do that. By default, none of that stuff exists in the Azure Fabric or the Azure context that first script is run in. So I use that first script, then launch that second script to run it locally on my hybrid worker. That server there the server that's part of this worker, so this one worker I have here, this SVC BCDR 27, that server is a local server in that lab. And I'm using credentials, those custom credentials I had previously, to essentially has the access it needs to manipulate my primary DNS server. So this saves me from having to load modules within the Azure Automation account that I have. Could I have done it that way? Well, I absolutely could. There's just like everything in scripting, there's probably 50 different ways to do it. And probably about 10 of them are probably the ways you want to do it and ignore the rest. So I've chosen the path of a kind of more traditional route of, hey, this is going to manipulate local servers. So I think it's going to run more efficiently if I just kind of pass that script off to a local server, run it as a hybrid worker on my on-premises environment and do whatever I need. Stitch up DNS, stitch up my load balancers, maybe manipulate hard-coded configuration files. Certain applications have, you know, raw IP addresses in them. If the IP addresses change, well, I need to do something about that during disaster recovery. I can do that manually, which is, I guess, one way to do it, fraught with errors and humans forgetting. Or I can do a script that I can test and test again and make sure that it'll work each and every time, especially the day when and if you need it. Okay, so let me move once again back to my content. And I think really the only thing I had was that last slide. Let me just put it up there again. And so, yeah, so these are pretty good primer documentation. Again, if offline, if you want to reach out to me, I'm happy to share my particular scripts. The DNS PowerShell commandlet, that one is basically just the commandlet reference. And if you do a search for, like I did, because it's been, you know, it's not like I do DNS every day through PowerShell. Who does? That's okay. But there's dozens and dozens of people that said, hey, this is a sample of how to manipulate an A record. And that's all I did. I just plagiarized 90% and then filled in the blank for the last 10%. Okay. So let me do that. So let me pause there and I'm going to look through. There's a few questions here. Is this example P to A? Looks like somebody answers these. It's Hyper-V. So yeah, you're right. So physical, I'm assuming P is, you're talking about physical servers to Azure failover. If that's the case, no, these were Hyper-V VMs. But again, like I said, it doesn't matter. At least the point I'm trying to make around automating and stitching up things like DNS or what have you. It doesn't matter. The nice thing is it's use and reuse. So VMware VMs, physical servers, or Hyper-V, there's not a whole lot of difference from that respect. In fact, there's really none from that respect. Have you set up a site-to-site VPN from on-prem to Azure? I absolutely have. So I didn't go through that, but yes, there is a that lab segment. It just has an RAS server. So it doesn't have to be RAS. It could be any Ike V2 capable VPN edge device in order to set up a site-to-site VPN tunnel between that lab and that virtual network. So that vPod to VNet that you saw that I failed over to, that is essentially, yes. The assumption is I've got cross connectivity there. It could be a site-to-site VPN, which is the easiest and cheapest way to do it, or it could be ExpressRoute. So ExpressRoute, we have private peering, and it's the same thing. We have, you advertise both sides. So you have your VNet networks and your on-premises networks. They can see each other and therefore know how to route to each other. And that was very much the assumption, because in most cases, when it comes to DR and of on-premises devices, more often than not, that's going to be a good assumption. They're going to want and already have cross connectivity for other reasons. DR just happens to be one of those many other reasons. It looks like James had just thrown out a bunch of stuff. Well, yeah, wikis are probably good. Yeah, those are all good links. Thanks, James. There's a lot of good technical documentation. The wikis are good, so there's a lot of different modes. You know, certain people, I don't particularly am a wiki fan. I get it. I'm more of a kind of a blog guy and needing videos the way I learn. But yeah, those are absolutely good references as well. Okay. I don't see any other questions. What I'm going to do, since this is my last call of this particular series, I'm going to go ahead. We've got about 60 or so people left. I'm going to go ahead and unmute audience. So when I do this, you'll have to then unmute yourselves if you want to say an audio question, and I'll do my best to take care of it. So here we go. Everybody should have the ability to unmute. And everybody is very shy, apparently.
Well, hello, Kevin.
Yes.
Yes, James here. Well, I'd like to thank you for all the sessions you did on OMS Friday.
Yeah, I appreciate it, James. I like I said, it's I don't think this is goodbye. It's just we're going to try to figure out if what makes sense for next. So I'm glad you enjoyed it. I know a few other people have. And like I said, the recordings and all that stuff, far as I know, unless they decide to they need the space, I'm not going to take them down anytime soon for review. So.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. You're welcome. All right. Let's leave the line open here for another minute or two. Do you mind uploading scripts for recording? I think I'll do that. So I'll probably post those. If you don't see them or it's confusing or whatever, but what I'll do is maybe I'll throw them to the OneDrive. So I'll try to name them something identifiable. But all else fails, just email me at kevin.sullivan, and I can take care of you. But yeah, and really, there's just those two scripts in this particular example. The other scripts that were in there were just variations of the same exact two scripts. Thanks, George. Yeah, that would probably make sense. The folder called scripts, because if I called it, something like, Eiffel Tower or something, that probably would be confusing.
Hey, Kevin, it's Dwayne.
Hey, Dwayne.
I joined a little late, so sorry if you covered this, but part of what we do with our dual authentication setup, did you talk about what you had to do with a security account to get it to work in a dual authentication environment?
Yeah, so I really didn't, Dwayne, and the reason is because I cheated a little bit in this example. So one of the things I did show is that because so the script is running under the Azure Authority context. So I have two credentials in that Azure Automation account. So I've got one that basically has ownership of the subscription, so I can do anything I need to within that subscription. And then the other one I have is a credential for basically for that on-premises server, so when it gets passed to the hybrid worker. Now I could have embedded in the script, enter a PS session and use credentials, but what I did instead, if you notice, if hopefully my screen is back sharing again, if you look at, let me go back to it because it was very subtle and I didn't really explain it, but if you look at the hybrid work group settings, notice I'm using a custom run as credential. That credential is a local admin account of the domain. So basically what's happening is the hybrid worker by default is already in the context it needs to get at and attack that DNS server, right? So that's how I'm handling it in this particular case. But you're absolutely correct. There's other ways to do it.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. And I chose this way, and it's not this would be that uncommon, because if you think about it, if I'm going to run a hybrid worker and it's going to do a bunch of admin things in this particular environment, it might just be easier to default that to a credential, because you can store it securely, that has all the information and access that it needs. But you don't have to, right? And people that are more, people that are more aggressive about their security stance, right? They need everything locked down and everything's got to be very, very specific. That's okay too. But yeah, you can pass through and store secured credentials and use those credentials in and out of those scripts securely without exposing, passwords and all that stuff, to the open as well. Absolutely.
Looks good.
All right. I think that might be it, guys. So until next time, or rather, whatever I define or what my role defines as next time as we move forward. I want to wish everybody a happy summer, good summer, and I'm sure we'll cross paths again and go that way. So. I thank you again. If you think of something and think I might have an answer for you, or at least maybe smart enough to at least redirect you to somebody that is smarter than me to answer the question, feel free to reach out. It's just kevin.sullivan at microsoft.com. Thanks, guys.